FMR 101.3 FM.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Fine Music Radio and Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, I'm sure you must remember that awful day on the 18th of April 2021 when a huge fire fled across the mountain, burnt down the restaurant up there near the Rhodes Memorial, burnt down a library, and also burnt down the Mostert's Mill, which was left as a horrible-looking stump after its beauty. Mostert's Mill is a typical Cape Tower mill with a thatched cap, and adjoining the mill is a threshing floor and a thatched house, which was probably the miller's house. And the private mill was built on a farm called Velgelegen about 1796, the year after the Battle of Muizenberg, when the British took control of the Cape. And until then, under the rule of the Dutch East India Company, building and operation of mills were strictly controlled, and private mills were rare. And now, just a few weeks ago, on April the 20th, 2024, 2 days after the actual initial date of the fire, Mostert's Mill reopened with a lovely ceremony, with lovely snacks and speeches, and I got a rare opportunity to actually go into the mill. Well, with me in the studio is the chairman of the Friends of Mostert's Mill and one of four of the restoration team itself, and his name is John Hammer. John, welcome back, because I spoke to you a few days after the fire, didn't I?
Yes, Rodney.
And when everyone was rather devastated, I think you said you spent quite a lot of time sobbing, as it did everybody else.
And other people standing at the gate. Yeah. People just came up to the gate crying.
I remember you said that on that day you had just finished doing a whole lot of restoration.
The day before.
And you went away, heaved a sigh of relief and switched your phone off.
Yes, exactly.
And then?
And then I heard at 5 o'clock on that Sunday, it was a Sunday, I switched my phone on and I had about 20, 30 missed calls. And the first one I listened to said, Mostert's Mill's burning. And my heart sank right into my boots.
Yeah. And did you then race through? What did you do?
I kind of thought I didn't even want to go and see because it had started burning at 12 and then I couldn't keep away. So I actually drove up to the mill because I lived close to the mill. And when I got there, the firemen were still busy, but the mill had already been destroyed. There were a few flickering flames in the windows. They wouldn't let me in, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the very next morning, I pitched up there and to see what could be salvaged. And the most important thing was the metalwork, the ironmongery. Much of it is blacksmith's work from 200 years ago. Wow. And I knew that we needed to save that before the scrap merchants got hold of it.
Yeah. And did you manage to save it?
We did, yes. I was there on the Monday, and then two other people came, Andy Self and John Wilson Harris, on Wednesday. And they eventually became two other members of the restoration team.
Mm-hmm. But John, that seeing the mill broken like that must have broken your heart, because the inside is all wood, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. It was all woodwork, and a lot of it was old ship's timbers from rescued wrecks on Table Bay Beach. The thing that really got to me is that I'd been a miller there for 25 years, and I had in my head these huge, big wooden components. And when I went into the mill, it was just a little pile of grey ash.
Gosh. What happened to the millstone, that huge thing?
Yeah, there are two millstones there on the floor above. They fell down after the floors burnt. They fell down and got rather badly damaged.
Okay.
So we've actually let them into the floor on the ground floor. They're part of the floor, so they're still part of the mill. Mm-hmm. But we've got a very super-duper refurbished pair of millstones from out of Europe.
So there are two millstones in the mill.
That's right.
Mill.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
One grinding on the other.
And they're high up. That's what amazed me, because surely they're rather heavy.
Yeah, 700 kilograms each, and we had to get them up on the... But you go to all that effort because you want gravity to feed the meal. So the bottom floor is called the meal floor. So you need a meal spout bringing the meal. It's not called flour, it's meal, because it's got everything in it. It's got the wheat germ and the bran. And that comes down a spout into the bag. So you need gravity. So you go to all that trouble getting those 700 kg each up onto the floor. And the floor above is called the stones floor.
Okay, because it's a fairly narrow space to get 700 kilograms of solid weight up there.
Yeah, we left enough space to be able to get it up, and we're fortunate these days we've got chain blocks. In the old days, they had to use blocks and pulleys and things like that. With a chain block, when you're pulling it up, when you stop, it stops. So it's not so. But still, yeah, it took some doing getting. We had six people. One of the guys said it was the most fun day he'd ever had at work in his whole life. So,
what, putting the millstones?
Getting the millstones up onto the floor above.
Where did the millstones come from?
Just after the fire, I'd had visitors, Dutch millers, and one was Sven Verbeek. And we'd kept in contact. And straight after the fire, he started crowdfunding in Europe. And he made 5,500 euros. And with that money, he managed to find a pair of millstones and also had the sailcloths made. So the only thing that came from Europe were the millstones. They came on a ship, the Santa Teresa. We followed her down the coast to make sure nothing happened to her because they had precious cargo for us.
Yes,
in it.
My goodness.
And then the sailcloths are something that they used to making in the Netherlands, and it would have been a job getting somebody here to make them.
When did you make the decision that you were, in fact, going to save it and restore it? Or did you ever feel, okay, that's it, we've lost it?
The very next morning, a woman looked over the gate and said, you're not going to repair it, are you? And I said, yes, we are, that very next morning.
So you knew. You've got to get this thing up and working again.
The phoenix must rise from the ashes.
Yes, and it did. It looked terrible, didn't it, for such a long time. The burnt stub standing there after its initial beauty.
Yes. One of the first things we did was to put a plastic cover over the top so there, with winter coming, no more rain got into the walls and caused more damage. And the next thing, we had to make sure that the building was sound. There was no point doing anything before we knew. So we got a structural engineer to come and have a look at the building, and he gave us the go-ahead and gave us recommendations about what to do. So we're very lucky that the building itself, it's made of sun-baked bricks, but now we can say it's kiln-baked bricks after the fire.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, it's amazing, actually, that it did survive that fire. It was a big fire, let's face it, that took it down.
Yeah, and you can imagine when the doors blew in, that was like a chimney inside there. Mm-hmm. So that was why there was absolutely nothing left besides the blacksmith's ironmongery.
Good grief. Okay, I want to find out more details about the restoration. But first of all, you'll know that we demand you choose some music, John. And what have you chosen for or to share with us?
Yeah, well, last time I was here, I had all male singers. So I thought I needed to correct things a little bit. So this time I've chosen all women singers, female singers. And the first one is Joan Baez. Love Mine is Zero.
My love, she speaks like silence, without ideals or violence. She doesn't have to say she's faithful, yet she's true, like ice, like fire. People carry roses, make promises. Conclusions on the wall. Some speak of the future. My love, she speaks softly. She knows there's no success like failure, and that failure's no success at all. Cloak and dagger dangle. Crumble into one another. My love winks, she does not bother. She knows too much to argue or to judge. The bridge. Russian midnight trembles. The country doctor rambles. Banker's nieces seek perfection, expecting all the gifts that wise men bring. The wind howls like a hammer. The night grows cold and rainy. My a broken wing.
That was Joan Baez with the piece called Love Minus Zero, the first choice of my guest this week here on People of Note, whose name is John Hammer, who, as I've said, is the chairman of Friends of Mostert's Mill. We're talking about the restoration of Mostert's Mill after that dreadful fire 3 years ago, and now it's standing there looking rather magnificent. I just wanted to know why you chose that. Are you a Joan Baez fan?
I am, yes. Yeah, it's all that music from my sort of era, the 70s and 80s, and she was definitely one of, and she has the most beautiful voice, so I thought an appropriate thing to bring along.
I want to cover sort of the history of this mill, but at the moment, let's just continue on the restoration, then we'll go back in time, because isn't it amazing that these Dutch people raised all that money for the millstones? And the wood that's there now, where did that come from?
That was the second thing that we had to consider. So Andy Self, he was came on the third day of the fire, and I realized, and we all realized, we needed to set up a restoration team. So it was John Wilson Harris, he was the architect from Fagans, and he was going to be put in charge of the building itself. And Andy Self, who had been with me helping as the millwright at the mill before the fire, he was put in charge of the machinery. And then our treasurer at the Friends of Mostert's Mill, Clive Thorpe, he pointed out to me that this was going to be quite a big project and we'd need a financial manager. So he was the fourth member of the team. And myself, as the chairman of the Friends of Mostert's Mill, I was the fourth member of that team.
Not only was it a big project, but you needed lots of money. And where did the money come from?
Well, straight after the fire, the public of Cape Town generously, and throughout South Africa, but particularly in Cape Town, within 2 months we'd made 200,000 rand out of ordinary Capetonians.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and at just after that, after the fire, not long afterwards, I got a phone call from Peter van der Poel, who is a representative of the Rupert Foundation, offering help from the Rupert family. And so he told us to draw up a business plan and a budget, and which we did. And the Ruperts came to the party and funded the bulk of the restoration.
Gosh, bravo for them.
And absolutely.
They are famous for that, aren't they?
Absolutely.
With helping with cultural things.
Absolutely.
So you got all this together. There's nothing mechanical in the mill, is there? I mean, there's no electrics. It's all wood.
No. The mill was built in 1796, so it's actually a medieval mill. So all they had was woodwork and ironwork and masonry work. So, yeah, everything is as 100 years before that, the mill would have looked much the same inside. So it's actually a medieval mill. It was only in the 1800s, in the Industrial Revolution, they started getting fancy with all sorts of things. So it's a very, very simple mill, and for that reason alone, worth preserving.
Yeah. And is it working now, would you say, better than before, or have you reached the same standard?
No, much better than before. We had problems. We had beetle in the brake wheel, and somebody said, well, the fire definitely cured that. And we had a rotten pole end. So we had problems, and yeah, the millstones didn't match properly, all sorts of things. And so the fire has, in a way, definitely we have a much better mill now than we ever had before.
My goodness. Am I right in saying you have a millstone outside in the ground, or am I going mad?
There is an old millstone down there. We found the bits of it in the garden, and I think it was the one that matched one of the millstones inside. We're going to talk about the earlier restorations just now. Mm-hmm. But, so the two millstones that were in the mill during the fire, they've been let into the ground floor. And that one was one that was always broken up and in the garden. So I think that when it broke, the millwright actually found another stone to replace it with.
Okay. And the other little thing about that lovely opening ceremony you had on a rather cloudy and cool Saturday morning when there was no wind, so we didn't see the sails turning, was the cannon, which shocked us with the volume of sound it made.
Yes, that was those cannon guys, was their idea, and they came to me and said, do you want to have a cannon firing? And I thought, well, there wasn't any particular significance to it. We just thought it would be a fun thing to
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. Give it a bit of a sort of a flair, for want of a better
Absolutely,
word.
Absolutely, yeah.
So here you've got all this new wood, new millstones and everything inside. And you said the wood came from?
All over the place. So that was Andy's first brief, was to go and find the material, the wood, and to find craftsmen that could work it. We already decided right at the beginning that we weren't going to just rely on volunteers, because then it could have taken forever. And so we decided, after we'd been offered the money by the Rupert Foundation, that we could go and find the best craftsmen. Cool. And we were so lucky. In total, there were 6 different craftsmen. And they all had access to the right kind of timber. And so we've got 25 different kinds of wood inside the mill. Andy's actually made a board with a piece of each kind of wood we've used inside the mill.
Which is in the mill, isn't it?
It's in the mill. Yes,
But it's a strange, because I'm so keen to know how it works. There's that big wheel that fascinated me, which the sails turn, presumably.
That's right. Yes, yeah.
And that in turn.
So the big outside, of the whole things are called the sails.
Yes.
And they have a wind shaft that goes from the outside through into the mill. Attached to the wind shaft is a brake wheel. The brake wheel's got cogs on it, and they engage in a lantern pinion, which is attached to the vertical shaft. And the vertical shaft is attached to the runner stone, and that's what turns the runner stone. So the power of the wind from outside is transmitted through a set of gears. It's called a Vitruvian mill. And that's what drives the runner stone on top of the bedstone.
And most all that is wooden.
All of that is wooden, yes.
And the metal bits you had before, that's all now been included in the new mill.
That's right. They bind the wooden pieces together.
Oh, they would have to, wouldn't they?
Yes, yeah.
My goodness. Okay, we're going to go talking about the rest, the background in a moment. But your next piece of music, another lady I see here, Joni Mitchell.
That's right, yes.
What have you chosen and why?
Cactus Tree. Same sort of reason as Joan Baez, my sort of era of music, quite a figure in her time, and also a very beautiful voice.
There was a man who's been out sailing in a decade full of dreams, and he takes her to his schooner, and he treats her like a queen. Barren beads from California, with their amber stones and their green. He has called her from the harbor, he has kissed her with his freedom, he has heard her off to starboard, the breaking and the breathing of the water weeds. And she's so busy being free. There's a man who's climbed a mountain and he's calling out her name, and he hopes her heart can hear. 3,000 miles he calls again. He can think her there beside him. He can miss her just the same. He has missed her in the forest, while he showed her all the flowers, and the branches sang the chorus as he climbed the scaly towers of a forest tree. She was somewhere being free. There's a man who sent her a letter, and he's waiting for his reply. He has asked her of her travels since the day they said goodbye. He writes, I wish you were beside me. We can make it if we try. He has missed her at the office, with her name on all of his papers. Through the sharing of the profits, he will find it hard to shake her from his memory. And she's off somewhere, being free. There's a lady in the city, and she thinks she loves them all. There's the one who's thinking of her, and there's the one who sometimes calls. There's the one who writes those letters with his facts and figures scrawled. She has brought them to her senses. They have laughed inside her laughter. Now she rallies her defenses, for she fears that one will ask her for eternity, while she's much too busy being free. There's a man who sends her medals. He is bleeding from the war. And there's a jumpster and a jester, and the man who owns a store. There's a drummer and a dreamer, and you know there may be more. She will love them when she sees them. They will lose her if they follow, and she only means to please them. And her heart is full and hollow like a cactus tree, while she's so busy being free.
Joni Mitchell, and you said, John, a beautiful voice. What was that piece called?
That piece is called Cactus Tree.
Okay. John Hammer is my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week, brought to you by Peter Turin Productions. And we're talking about Mostert's Mill, which I'm sure you know was completely burnt out in the fire in 2021. It's been restored and is standing there looking quite magnificent, even with a little Irish Terrier.
Scottish Terrier.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Well, the fact of the matter is I started at the mill in 1995, and when I started at the mill, I had a Scottish Terrier called Hamish. And all the time that I have worked at the mill since 1995, I've had four various different Scottish Terriers. So I had a Hamish, then I had an Angus, and then I had a Maggie, and now a Jamie.
Okay, and they
Jamie was in fact in his mother's tummy during the fire. He was born 3 weeks after the fire.
Oh, good grief. And so this is a little wooden cutout you've
got. It's not, it's a metal cutout.
Oh, is it?
And
is it metal?
And that's the brake lever that sticks out there, rather the brake pole that sticks out of the back of it. What normally happens is the Dutch millwrights put their symbol up there, and there was a rooster up there. And that was the symbol of Dunning and Bremer that had restored the mill in 95. That company had been sold on, and we had no help from them at all. So we decided that the rooster shouldn't go back, but we should have a Scottish Terrier instead.
The other thing, apart from the Scottish Terrier, I remember seeing on the internet, wherever, about the moustache.
Yes, it's called a beard rather than a moustache. Yes. That's traditional in Dutch mills. There was a bit of, in 95, they decided not to put it back because it wasn't Cape. But the people who decided not to put it back are not with us anymore, so we decided we wanted it back again.
Good for you. I just want to now ask you about, look, it's been around since 1796, and some of that time it's been thoroughly derelict, hasn't it?
Absolutely,
and
yes.
Yet it survived.
It did, thanks to the building itself. You know, that the walls are tremendously thick, and that is why it survived. So the farm passed through a number of hands until it came into Cecil John Rhodes' hands in the late 1890s, and we've actually got photographs from then. It still had a thatched cap, but there were no sails or anything like that. And I don't think Rhodes was particularly interested in doing any. It was just called the Old Mill on Groteskier Estate. And then in 1935, the Dutch government offered to have the mill repaired. And through the Department of Public Works, the architect, Mr. Cleland, they got it together and the mill was restored. A young millwright was sent from the Netherlands, Chris Bremer, and he spent 6 months in the Cape and he got the mill up and running again. But they decided it would only be used for ceremonial occasions, and that's not a good thing. A mill needs to work, a wooden machine. If you leave it for any length of time, it starts deteriorating. So in 1995, the decision was made that it must work. And so a Dutch mill came, a miller came and taught us how to, three of us, how to work the mill. And then every month, once a month, weather permitting and enough millers, we used to do that. Once a month, we got the mill working, and that's the intention in the future.
So it wouldn't work during the week, every day. It's going to work just once a week.
It was a little farm mill, and the way it worked in the old days would have been once or twice a month, okay. And that's what we're going to be doing.
But John, your association with the mill is interesting, isn't it? Because your career really was at sea, wasn't it? And I remember the first time I interviewed you as one of the senior pilots in Table Bay Harbor. So did I remember you saying this is your land-based ship?
That's correct, yes. I worked on a big square rigger sailing ship. So when I was at the university and walking past it down to my home in Mowbray, I saw this thing with sails on it, and I thought, well, there you go, a land-based sailing machine.
So how did you get involved?
I saw in the local community newspaper there was a meeting in the Mowbray Town Hall for the formation of the Friends of Mustard's Mill. And I went along to that meeting, and for my pains, I've been on the committee ever since.
Gosh, my goodness me. And does it feel a bit sort of nautical with the sails up there?
Yeah, it kind of does in a way, I guess. Yeah, we got to climb up the sails to tie them, the sail cloths. You've got to climb up there. And I found when I was on the square rig I worked on that I liked being up there. I was born 100 years too late. I like climbing up things and tying sails to them.
So these sails that we talk about, it's actually a wind-driven machine. If there's no wind, they don't work. You can't just switch on something and they suddenly start turning.
Absolutely. The only electrics we got in the mill is a plug downstairs for the vacuum cleaner.
Good grief. Well, at least we know it's clean. But how do you turn this, what did you call it? It's not wheat.
It's meal, yeah. Meal. It's a whole wheat meal. That's its correct name.
Where do you get it from?
We've been very fortunate that the fire, a lot of people popped out of the woodwork all over the place offering help, and one of them was a man called Johan Mustard. He's from the Malmesbury area, and he said he could procure wheat for us. You know, you can't just go down to the shops and buy a 50-kilogram bag of wheat. So he brought the wheat about 2 months ago, the first, and he's going to continue getting wheat to the mill. And so before the opening ceremony, we had to do some milling, and that was the first wheat we used. We had a nice windy day, and we made enough whole wheat meal to make all the bread necessary for the two opening ceremonies.
So that bread that we were eating was, in fact, made at the mill?
Absolutely, made by the wind.
Now, the people who, every third Saturday you're going to be open, is that right?
Every third Saturday of the month.
That it will be turning wheat into flour.
Meal.
Meal.
And you'll be able to buy it there, but it's totally dependent on the wind. And
yes.
Unfortunately, this time of the year, everybody is very happy when there isn't any wind except us windmillers. So we haven't had any luck with, since that day we had that good wind, we haven't really had any luck with the wind at all.
Does it have to be a certain direction, the wind, or can it?
No. The mill, the whole cap of the mill can be turned into the wind. There's a tail pole go down the back and a capstan on that, and two men hauling on that. You can haul the whole cap around into whichever direction the wind comes from. Old Gijsbert van Rennen, when he built the mill, was quite clever where he positioned it. There are a lot of trees there now, but they never used to be. And it's right on that ridge where in winter the northwester comes up the one side and in summer the southeaster up the other side. So he thought quite carefully about the position of the mill.
And when it's a very strong southeast, for example, it's not likely to cause damage?
No. The sail cloths that fit on the sails can be filled like on a yacht. So you can roll up a quarter or a half And in a really strong wind, without any sailcloths on at all, you can still be doing it.
My goodness. So when there is a strong wind, you people have to, as you said earlier, climb up as you would on a rigger and roll up the sails.
Well, you can do that from the ground, but when you set up in the mornings, every one of those sails, as it becomes vertical, you put the brake on, and somebody's got to take each sailcloth up of the four sailcloths and tie the two knots up at the top.
So when the public comes to your open days, as we said, the third Saturday of each month, what do they do? Do you show them around the mill inside make the stuff?
The idea is, we've realized the new millstones are quite a bit bigger than the old ones, so we need a lot of wind to get them working properly, and we found that. It's a little bit daunting having it going so fast with the public hanging around. So what the intention is to actually mill on windy days in between. And then on the open days, we will turn the mill and we will show people how it works, but not necessarily do hard work at the mill. But we hope that we'll have made enough product to be able to sell. People that come to the mill can buy the meal. And I give them, they always say, can we buy bread? And I say, no, here's a recipe, you go and make your own bread.
And people presumably do that. They love the idea of taking this meal that has been made as they watched it by this huge mill.
And it's a very interesting story. The meal, what the white flour you buy in the shops, they've stripped out the wheat germ and the bran, and they've actually removed 80% of the nutrients. The white flour only contains 20% of the nutrients. So the meal is much healthier for you. People that are not the very gluten intolerant, but people that are mildly gluten intolerant, they can eat bread made with the meal because it's got the whole product. It's got everything in it.
It sounds wonderful. I'm going to have to learn how to bake bread. You'll have to give me a recipe, John.
Oh, yes. No, there is a recipe on the website.
Your next piece of music, another lady, Nora Jones.
That's right. Yeah, so we're moving forward in time a little bit, getting nearer to... And she's another female singer that I really like her voice.
Sunrise, sunrise, looks like morning in your eyes, but the clock's held 9:15 for hours. Sunrise, couldn't tempt us if it tried, 'cause the afternoon's already come and gone. And I said, who? Ooh.
Nora Jones singing for us there, a piece called Sunrise. And another choice of my guests, I'm talking to John Hammer, who's the chairman of Friends of Mostert's Mill, which has just reopened after that devastating fire of 3 years ago, the 18th of April, 2021. You said you'll never forget that day, John.
No, I'll never forget it.
And I can imagine, because clearly, as with a shipping person, it becomes part of you. It becomes part of your soul.
Absolutely. And in fact, ships, you know, you very rarely spend more than 6 months to a year on, whereas I've been involved with the mill since 1995, so it's become very much part of my life.
This business of Friends of Mostert's Mill, is that a group? Is it a large group of people? Not necessarily.
Not really.
A panel.
We decided early on in 1995 with the formation of the Friends of Mostert's Mill. We're a non-profit organization. We have regular meetings, committee meetings, and we have an AGM every year. So we are a properly constituted body. And our brief was to take care of the mill, to show visitors how an ancient windmill works, and to train other millers, the next generation, so that they can take on the mill and keep it going. Because as I said before, if the mill doesn't work, it's going to become derelict once more, as it did in the past.
Just a couple of questions. The land, you said, it's on a farm, was it? That actual land there?
Yes, that farm's called Velgelegen, and it dates from 1676. So it's really one of the oldest pieces of land. Our vision, in fact, is the old house below that burnt in the fire as well, is to eventually have that. There are plans afoot to get that restored and then to take the security fence down between the mill and that, and to have that back as an 18th century farmyard with a 18th century mill in it, windmill, which is going to be pretty unique.
Of course, that house burned down, didn't it, in the fire?
Yes.
And so the ruins are still there.
The ruins are still there.
Because you concentrated, obviously, on the mill.
But the mill, that'll never be the mill is my responsibility, but the demurler is too much for me to take on. But there are plans afoot. I'm not free to discuss them at the moment.
That's fine. So what did that house do originally? What was it for?
As I say, that farm dates from 1676. So that the very front part of that house would have been the original long cottage that the farmer would have moved into. People tend to say it's the miller's house, but that mill was a little farm mill, and I don't think anyone other than the farmer worked the mill. Mm-hmm. So, like with all the Cape Dutch farms, when the farmer got rich, he actually built a big manor house, and then that became like the manager or the eldest son's house, the Onkers heist. And so de Mueller. Rhodes let the two old curry ladies live in those houses, Velgelegen, until they died, and then it would revert to the state. Rhodes left that whole estate to the public, to be looked after by the Public Works Department. The one lived to be 106 and the other 105, so it took a while to get them out.
Yeah.
And then Paul Sauer, the Minister of Transport in the 50s, decided he wanted to live in de Mueller, and since then it's been a cabinet minister's house. But they've indicated they don't want that anymore.
So the government doesn't have anything to do with the mill?
It belongs to the state, not the government, but the state. It actually, and Rhodes left in his will that the Department of Public Works were to look after it. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things the Friends of Mostert's Mill took on the task of looking after the mill on behalf of the department.
Oh, I see.
And so when you come to the mill, you actually have to join as a friend of Mostert's Mill to come on site, because the only permission we've ever got from the Department of Public Works is for the members of the Friends of Mostert's Mill to be on site. So when you come to the gate, you actually sign up as a member.
Okay. And then do you have to sign up as a member every time you come?
No. It's a yearly. It's 50 Rand for an individual and 100 Rand for a family for a year's membership.
Okay. So that's good to remind people if they want to come and have a look at the mill now that it's been restored on the third Saturday of each month. Don't forget to bring some cash, because you don't charge an entrance fee, but this is joining as a friend.
Yeah, we are hoping to go cashless so that we'll have a little. We have got a snap scan there, so it's not terribly serious if you haven't got any cash in your pocket. But we are planning in the near future to go cashless, where we will have a machine there where you can tap your card on it.
All these mod cons.
Absolutely.
In the old mill. Okay, we're going to do another piece of music now. What are you playing us now, John?
Cesario Vora, bringing things back to Africa in a way. She's also another woman with an extremely beautiful voice. The Barefoot Diva, they call her.
Bésame, bésame mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho. Miedo tenerte y perderte después. Bésame, bésame mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame mucho, que tengo miedo tenerte y perderte después. Quiero tenerte muy cerca, mirarme en tus ojos, verte junto a mí. Que tal vez mañana ya estaré muy lejos de ti. Bésame, bésame mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho, que tengo miedo tenerte y perderte después. Mirarme en tus ojos, verte junto a mí. Piensa que tal vez mañana ya estaré muy lejos de ti. Bésame, bésame mucho. Como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho. Que y perderte después.
John, you need to tell me who that was, because I can't quite pronounce it.
Her name's Cesaria Vora. She's from one of the islands off the west coast of Africa. And as I said, they call her the Barefoot Diva. And it's a song called Besame Mucho, which is Spanish for Kiss Me a Lot.
John Hammer's my guest. We're talking about the Mostert Mill and the fact that it's been refurbished and is going to be open to the public on the third Saturday of every month, turning wheat into meal so you can make your bread. John, you explained how you got involved with the mill, that you used to walk to Varsity and look at it there. But it must have been, now that you've retired from the harbour as a pilot, it must be quite a job, especially after a disaster like this. Is it time consuming?
Well, the whole restoration project came along. The fire was, it gave me something to do with my retirement. I was kind of left my job in the harbour and wondered what I was going to do with myself. And then I was confronted by a burnt mill. And for the last 3 years, it hasn't been every day. Andy Self lives up in Grabo, so he comes down from the mountains about once a week, depending on what was needed. We had to wait for the contracts to do certain things to the building. But besides the six craftsmen I told you about, pretty much Andy and I have been inside the mill, beavering away at it. Although I'm the chairman, I'm his handlanger. I carry the tools up to him because he's the man who knows what to do with them. I'm not.
Okay. But I remember the first time I interviewed on People of Note, an interview that created a lot of interest, was when you were talking about being a pilot in the harbour, a senior pilot there, which you'd been for some years, hadn't you?
I was being a pilot for 21 years.
Yeah. Do you miss any of that? Do you ever look out at sea or see a ship or see the wind and think, oh, I wish I was there, or thank goodness I'm not there?
I miss being on the ships and talking to the captains, and you know, it's my whole life has been ship bound. I that's my world. But I think I remember telling you that I was obsessed with the weather forecasts. I would look at 4 or 5 because my stress level would increase directly with proportional to the wind speed. Mm-hmm. So now I can look at the weather and with absolute indifference that whatever weather can come. It can come. It doesn't bother. I don't have sleepless nights about the weather. I must say, in that very strong southeaster we had recently, about a month ago, I did go up to the mill. I went upstairs and I had to listen. And we've learned from the Dutch millers how to put big chains up there to stop. There's a brake that holds the thing tight. But you can't just rely on that. So we've got two heavy chains that hold the brake wheel so that even in that gale there wasn't anything moving at all.
Wow. You know, as one does on Instagram and elsewhere these days, you see these pilots in rough seas trying to board ships. Did you ever fall in?
No, fortunately not. No, it's not something you try and do.
No,
but I must say that it can be 3 o'clock people don't realize that at 3 o'clock in the morning, if a container ship arrives, some poor pilot still has to go out there, climb up a rope ladder, get up to the bridge in the pitch dark, meet the captain, because the bridge has any dim lighting on it, and then bring the ship into the port. So, yeah, that climbing up the pilot ladder was actually something I quite enjoyed doing. And it gave you a good shot of adrenaline, so that by the time you got to the bridge, you were all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Yes, and ready to...
Even at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And I think you also told me that you've been privileged, that you've also brought in some of the magnificent ocean liners like QE2. I think Queen Mary was after you.
No, I docked the Queen Mary and undocked her 2 or 3 times.
Queen Mary, yes. Okay.
Yeah, I was... made the terrible decision when the security guard took me down to the gangway. I didn't even question it. He took me down all the service corridors and I never even got to see the grand lobby.
Shame. Well, I recommend you do, because what a grand ship that is. And is the harbour in good hands now, the pilots? Do we have good pilots?
Yeah, it's an ongoing job, one generation teaching the next generation, just as I will be teaching the next generation of millers. It's one of those continuous things. So when you pilot, you're teaching the next generation, and now as a miller, you're teaching the next generation, so you can keep the thing going.
I think you've had a wonderful life out there on the sea, climbing up the side of those huge ships, that concrete, that steel wall, and now training people for mills. Do you have people coming in for training?
Yes, we have. We've got three young people, well, younger than I am, that I will be training in the next while to be able to continue the mill, keep the tradition going.
Well, John, it's been fascinating talking to you. I'm so glad you came in, because I did speak to you just after the fire and the devastation that caused, I think, in your life as well. And now the joy of, and there was a lovely sense of joy that morning that you invited people for the official opening.
Yes, I must say the entire project has been a joyful project. You know, I never go to the mill thinking, oh dear, I have to go back to the mill. Every part of this restoration has given me immense pleasure, and Andy. So, yeah, it's been a job that's not been a trial, a tribulation. It's been an absolute joy.
Well, let's hope that people are going to go along and see it on a Saturday morning. Remind us, it's the third Saturday of the month at 10 o'clock.
That is correct, from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And I can't promise there will be wind.
No. Well, being Cape Town, we might be lucky. John, what's your last piece of music before I allow you to leave the studio?
Yeah, the last piece of music, Lorena McKennett, Prologue. She's a folk singer. Also in the same kind of vein as the previous music. Beautiful voice and a woman singer.
Well, all strength to your arm, John. And congratulations for what you and the team did. You've got a wonderful heritage object back in our midst.
Thank you, Rodney. Thank you.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
FMR 101.3 FM.